Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producer, as always, is Lou Pellegrino. It is the Sports Media Roundtable, and we have some new additions that I'm very excited about. Charlotte Wilder is a staff writer for SB Nation. Check her work out on that site. Andrew Buchholz is a returning guest. He is from Awful Announcing. And Dan Gartland, my colleague at Sports Illustrated, he does a lot of stuff for SI.com. We get into a discussion about the NFL Conference Championships and what kind of viewership we think will happen with the Patriots, Jaguars, and then the Vikings, Eagles. But the real crux of the conversation, and it was really interesting, Charlotte, Dan, and Andrew, they're all 30 and under. And we talk about where the profession is for them now, what some of the challenges they may be facing heading forward, what some of the opportunities they have, and just how they look at the business. And they offer some advice that if you are under 30, I think will be really helpful. So the guests are Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation, Andrew Buchholz of Awful Announcing, and Dan Gartland of SportsIllustrated.com, coming up on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. All right, so this is an exciting day for me because the roundtable has changed dramatically. No Jimmy Traina, thank God. No John Orand, who I do love. No Chad Finn, who I really, really love. No Jim Miller, who I love. All the people who I love and do not love who have been part of this sports media roundtable are gone, and we are now bringing in at least two new voices. Charlotte Wilder is a staff writer for SB Nation. If you do not know Charlotte Wilder, Google her work and check out in particular her pieces on going to the Kentucky Derby. And I think my favorite piece that she wrote, where she wrote about watching WrestleMania, having never watched wrestling before or been a wrestling fan. As someone who has watched wrestling most of his life, Charlotte, I love that piece. And so check that out. Charlotte Wilder is a staff writer at SB Nation. She is guest one. Dan Gartland is a writer for SI.com. I see him in the office a lot. He's one of the talented dudes that we have working there. And, you know, as long as the place exists, hopefully Dan will exist there too. Andrew Buchholz is a returning guest on this podcast. He's a staff writer at Awful Announcing, and he's the old man of this podcast at 30. Charlotte, Dan, and Andrew, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thanks, Richard.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
You got it. All right, Charlotte, I'm going to start with you. Mm-hmm. One of the things that gets discussed a lot on this podcast is naturally the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Heard of it.
Yes. And so we have New England versus Jacksonville in one of the playoff games, and we have the Vikings versus the Eagles in the other. And, you know, even though, you know, you're not covering sports media day to day, you obviously write about sports media, and you are paying attention, obviously, to the space. And the NFL has had its ratings issues this year.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very big weekend for them because, generally speaking, the conference championship game and the games and the Super Bowl are ratings immune, meaning that the numbers are usually great regardless of who's in.
Right.
But this is interesting to me because Jacksonville is really not a national team. You have the Patriots, and then you have this Minnesota-Philadelphia game, which is coming off an amazing Vikings victory. But you don't necessarily have these star quarterbacks that you can market, right?
Right.
Nick Foles and in and in Case Keenum. So I want to start off with you, and then we'll just go around the horn. Do you think this is going to be a big viewership weekend for the NFL, or do you think what has been the season-long story about declining viewerships continues this week?
You know, I think that's a really good question. I think that I'm kind of two minds about it. You know, on the one hand, sure, you don't have those huge big-name quarterbacks. You know, you have Brady is the only guy in that group that I think a lot of people expected would be there. You know, Nick Foles, Case Keenum, Blake Bortles. I mean, it sounds like you're joking at first, and then you're like, oh, no, actually, we're serious. So I think that in terms, what does a viewership usually have around, like 40 million-ish?
This is like the column I did that posted today. So the floor, basically, the low, would be a combined average of 44 million in the last couple of years. The high, and this usually happens if you get like big market teams like the Giants versus the Packers, something like that, the high is like low 50s.
Okay.
So they're looking between 44, let's say, million and 52 million.
I think it kind of depends, right? Like if you, the storylines are improbable in a way, which I, and I wonder if that would add to viewership. I don't think that's as strong of a hook for most sports fans as big names, though. And I think that it's probably, I'm a little bit coming at it from a different perspective because as a sports writer, as someone who follows this, who, you know, I love unexpected narratives. I love like, oh my God, you have Bortles going up against Brady. Like you have Keenum and Foles. And besides that, you have these teams where the Eagles have had this incredible season and it's been so improbable. And, you know, and then Wentz gets hurt. So you have that story. And then, you know, Jacksonville for the first time in, you know, what, 20 years, almost 20 years. And so I think that it's really compelling. But I don't know that that plays in a national audience outside of someone whose job it is to care about this stuff. And I'll be interested to see whether that can carry the viewership or whether you really kind of do need star power.
Dan, you have any sense as to what, you know, you're someone who works on our sort of breaking news wire desk. So you, more than almost anybody at Sports Illustrated, sees what stories basically are doing well metrically on our, you know, first it was chart beat. Now I think we're using Parsley. So you know basically what gets traffic and what gets traffic quick. So this is a combined question. In terms of how do you sense this weekend will do, and what have you seen, let's say, in the last couple of weeks in terms of digital stories about the Jags, about the Vikings, about Case Keenum, Nick Foles, et cetera?
Yeah, I think one thing that's interesting about particularly the NFC game, I mean, you have four teams that are playing, and three of them are really defense-focused, and that's not really what moves the needle a lot of times. People want to see people score a lot of points. So I think that could be sort of a downer maybe from a ratings perspective. Digitally, it's tough because like everyone loves to hate the Patriots. That's what people are going to tune in. They're going to want to see the Jags win, even though the Jags might not be the most exciting team. But they want to see the Patriots lose, so people will be very interested in seeing that. I think with the Vikings, you know, just that they're doing this with a backup quarterback and playing very well, whereas the Eagles have a backup quarterback and maybe they're sort of sputtering a little bit. So it'll be very interesting to see sort of the comparison there between how those offenses are doing and whether that's going to be like you saw with the Eagles and the Falcons, whether that's going to be a grinded out sort of defensive game, which people I don't think would be particularly enthused by.
Andrew, your site, I think this week, and this guy always does really interesting work to me. Jason Klinkscales wrote this piece about how, in his estimation analysis, the NFL's 2017 rating slide was mainly fueled by white viewers and younger viewers. And I encourage everybody to read that just demographically. He makes the case, and it's really interesting to see the numbers dropping among 18 to 35. So now, again, same question. We have these two matchups, Patriots-Jacksonville. As Charlotte mentioned, you do have Brady. As Dan mentioned, you do have, I guess, a lot of people tuning in maybe to hope the Patriots lose. And then for the life of me, even as somebody who covers this, I really don't have a good feel for the Vikings and the Eagles, you know, because again, like logically, had that craziness not happened yesterday, and we're taping this on a Monday, Nick Foles versus Case Keenum is a terrible television marketing play. It just is. No offense to those guys that, you know, Case Keenum obviously had a great year, but that's a very hard sell for marketing to casual fans, and you get a lot of casual fans watching on conference championship day in the Super Bowl. But now, because of the way that we saw that miracle finish, I just wondered, Andrew, you think this changes the equation a little bit? Do we see more, you know, quote-unquote casual NFL viewers coming next Sunday? Because, you know, maybe they read on their Facebook feed or they went to work and their friends were talking about, hey, did you see this crazy finish in the Vikings game?
Yeah, I think it's certainly possible. I think the way that game ended was great marketing for the NFL. It's the idea that anything can happen, that it's worth staying tuned in until the final seconds, even in all the times where it looks like the game's over. And that'll probably help with casual fans. I think the point Charlotte made about people tuning in for Brady is interesting. And the thing that intrigues me about that matchup with Jacksonville, I think there's potential there for that to be really good if the Jaguars start out well, if they're hanging with the Patriots, and if it turns to be something that's good for the long run, because I think that's a game that casual fans will watch because they want to see somebody take down the Patriots. Where I think it gets challenging is if the Patriots jump out to an early lead, everyone figures, oh, well, I've seen this song dance before, and tunes out. So I think there's a potential for quite a rating swing with that one. Overall, I think Jason's work that you brought up is interesting because that speaks to the overall decline we've seen this year in the ratings, and that's why I think that the ratings are going to come in on the low end. I think they're going to be closer to the floor you mentioned than the ceiling, and that isn't part of it maybe about the matchups this weekend, but I think the bigger picture is just that the NFL has lost a lot of fans this year in the regular season, in the wild card round of the playoffs, and I think that trend is going to continue.
Charlotte, I want all three of you guys to answer this because this was like an interesting topic, at least I thought. I was on this podcast Robert Simon does, Sports TV Ratings is his Twitter handle. And I was with Anthony Krupe, who's an Ad Age reporter, who I would argue maybe is the best guy in the country in terms of analyzing all this data because he talks to media buyers and he sort of can separate what's BS versus real in terms of NFL ratings. And so, Charlotte, like, one of the things we were talking about was, like, the Super Bowl. Like, is it totally immune to any of these forces, cord cutting, as Andrew mentioned, younger viewers moving from the NFL, quality of play, people have left the league, I think, at times, too many windows, oversaturation, bad quarterbacks, and then, yes, the whatever the group is that isn't watching because Colin Kaepernick took a knee a couple of years ago to the group that isn't watching because they're pissed off that the NFL didn't support. We've litigated this a million times in this podcast. I think it's statistically irrelevant. But if you were going to guess a couple weeks from now, regardless of who's in there, whether it's the Pats or the Jags or the Vikings or the Eagles, do you think the Super Bowl is going to – do you think the popularity of the Super Bowl as a television play will still be the same as we've seen it over the last couple of years, or – do you see any kind of possibility where they could lose 6 or 7 million, which would be a massive TV story?
Oh, man. You know, I think there's always a possibility that the ratings could be down, that they could lose viewers. I think it's unlikely from a social standpoint in the sense that it's a Super Bowl party and it's February and what the hell else are you going to do?
Right.
And, you know,
it's
like
cold.
It becomes, right. I mean, it becomes an event. It's fun. It's an excuse to get together and have this shared moment as a country, as, you know, cliche as that sounds. I don't mean like bringing the country together. I just mean it's like something that everybody's talking about. I think there's the fear of being left out of the conversation at work of, you know, it, I think it still is a big enough part of American culture that I don't see it slipping that much. I do think there's a very real possibility that it slides. You know, I could see the NBA playoffs gaining a ton of viewers in a way that I don't see the Super Bowl necessarily skyrocketing right now. I would be surprised if it did better than it has in the past. I would not be surprised at all if there was a bit of a slide. I just don't know to what degree that slide would occur.
Daniel, same thing. Generally speaking, the Super Bowl like lately is like 111 million viewers, 112, 113, 110. It's like sort of in that range. It's a fairly new phenomenon, but that sort of leveled over the last couple of years. I ask you the same thing that I asked Charlotte. Do you see a scenario where that could drop significantly, or as she was talking about, it's so, you know, it's the one game that is just so like ratings immune that people are going to watch it because it's an event and it doesn't matter even what happened during the regular season. It's going to get whatever number it gets.
Yeah, I think, you know, fewer people are watching, you know, cable television these days. But I think for the Super Bowl, if they have a reason to watch, they will watch. And if it, I think the only risk would be if it is Blake Bortles and not Tom Brady. Like, if it's Blake Bortles, you're not giving the super casual fan a reason to watch.
Yeah, that's a real factor.
Whereas everyone knows Tom Brady.
Andrew, I'm sorry, Dan. Go ahead. My bad.
No, go ahead. No, I was done.
You were done? It's over, Dan? That's it? You're
yeah,
finished? All right. We'll get back. Dan, I'll give you more air time, and it's a different question.
Sure.
Andrew, Same thing. You write about this, so you're really immersed in the weeds like I am. I actually do think Dan makes a good point there. It has generally been ratings immune, but I do think there is something to 2 weeks of marketing. And 2 weeks of marketing, Blake Bortles, I mean, again, even though he's had a nice last part of the year and a good playoff run, this is not Manning versus Brady. You know, it's not going to be Manning, Brady, Bradshaw, Staubach, you know, Elway, Marino. I mean, that's Blake Bortles is a tough sell, no matter how interesting a team Jacksonville is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that a Jacksonville win this coming weekend and Jacksonville in the Super Bowl is the one scenario where we could see a really significant drop. I think regardless of who's in it, I expect the Super Bowl ratings to be down a little bit, sort of towards that lower end of what you were talking about. But I think there is a chance that if Jacksonville gets in, it falls a bit further. And that's partly because Blake Bortles isn't a name. Apart from a whole lot of references on things like The Good Place and a whole lot of internet conversation, but he's not somebody who really is well known to the casual football fan, the casual NFL fan. The Jacksonville Jaguars certainly are not a team with a national following. They're a team that has a relatively recent history, not a lot of playoff success over the years, and so I think Charlotte made a good point earlier that they're really interesting from a sports writing perspective, and there's a lot of sports writers who are going to love covering that team if they wind up getting there, but I don't think that necessarily translates into a mass audience.
When you just said Bortles isn't a real name, and you meant in terms of like media, of like people's recognition, I thought you meant like it's literally not a name. It's like, that's been my favorite thing, Blake Bortles, like how is that a thing?
All right, Charlotte, we're going to get to this.
Because, yeah, like a Hunger Games character.
Yeah, I do not watch The Good Place. Clearly, Charlotte does. You two knuckleheads may as well. And so, Charlotte, January 12th. All right, so 3 days ago, Charlotte, I think this posted. You posted this piece with the Good Place producer Joe. How do I pronounce the last name?
Mandy.
Okay, on how basically Jacksonville Jaguars fandom became part of the show. So one of the people when we announced on Twitter you're going to be on was suggesting that if the Jaguars get to the Super Bowl, NBC should move the show. Which is kind of a genius though, Justin. Until after the Super Bowl, but this show basically in when you're talking to the producer, if they get to the Super Bowl, these guys are going to write this into the storyline, right?
Well, I mean, I think they have to, because the whole joke of the show is that the stupidest character on the show is obsessed with the Jags. He's an amateur DJ from Jacksonville who used to sell fake drugs to high school kids. Like, it's the most incredible storyline. And he, you know, when he's saying his vows at one point, that's not a huge spoiler, he says, "Jacksonville Jaguars rule," and then, like, gets married. And so I think that it's just so endearing on a lot of levels. It's also funny because the whole joke was based that this guy loves a team that's just like really bad and has been for 20 years, and now all of a sudden they're good. Like, they're objectively a good team.
One game away.
Yeah, and so, you know, when I was talking to Joe, he was like, I mean, we'll have to write it in. Like, there's no way. You know, I think they've finished writing season 3. I don't even know, but he was like, we would have to start the show with Jason on a Super Bowl float in Jacksonville.
And they drop Bortles' name in all the time?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, like, right. He, at one point, the best joke, I think, in the whole show about Bortles is one of the first ones when Jason, it's a flashback, and you see him throwing a Molotov cocktail at a speedboat. And it's like, and you know how some guys, like, people yell, Kobe, when they're taking a shot? He throws a Molotov cocktail and yells, Bortles!
That's pretty funny.
It's so good.
Have you guys, Dan or Andrew, do you watch the show at all?
No, yeah, but I've heard a huge fan.
All right, Andrew, you're a huge fan. Dan, you have not?
I have not. Yeah. No.
And all right, so Andrew, so what do you think of that idea? Maybe throwing the good. Am I right about? I should know this. Actually, somebody covers it. But the NBC does have a show after this? This Is Us, I think, is airing.
This
right?
Is Us. Yeah.
They're not gonna. That's their.
No.
That's their golden.
That's
goose. Our
goal. Yeah, they're goose. Maybe they can do like a 10-minute short then of the. but that is kind of cool though. Just the idea that The Good Place has Jacksonville Jaguars as a character, and then crazily enough, they may be in the they may be in the Super. By the way, Andrea, since I know you're a good Canadian, did you read the Globe and Mail like 3,000-word feature on Paw Patrol and its origins and how that guy is like the richest guy? Oh my God, the founders are like the richest people in Canada. You gotta check that. It's an amazing piece.
We should all get into children's television. Enough of the sports stuff.
Children's television.
It's where the ratings are.
Yes, yeah. No doubt. I mean, listen, Paw Patrol, Bubble Guppies. These, if ESPN and FS1 management were smart, they'd ditch the hot talkers and just rerun those. All right, let us talk about what I really have brought you three on here to talk about. And this is not something that's really been talked about on this podcast, so I'm glad you three are here, because obviously I can't do it. And that is about, what is it like being in the business right now, 30 years old or under, and the business referring to sports media? And Andrew, I'm going to start with you in terms of, you know, when I was in college and in grad school, the notion was always like you go to a small paper, newspaper, and you work your way up, and you know, you eventually get to some like Metro Daily paper at some city that you like, and that's the destination, and you know, that's how you work your career. Obviously, things massively change. The web comes and stuff. I have a very, very rare and fortunate career in that my only job after grad school is Sports Illustrated. I covered the Bills and Sabres for a couple of years in Buffalo, went to grad school, and then worked at SI. That is essentially never going to happen for anybody your age, because people just don't keep jobs like this long anymore. So we'll start with you, Andrew. When you're looking at the profession now at your age, and you're 30 years old, how do you look at both what you want to do short term, and how do you look at what you want to do long term, and what the possibilities are for either?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big challenge. I mean, you've obviously seen a huge number of changes over the years, Richard, and I've seen a huge amount just in the years that I've been doing it. I did sort of the path you mentioned at first. After university, I went and worked at a small paper for a little while. Then I caught on with Yahoo and worked for them for 7 years or so, and started with Awful Announce at the same time. And so, I mean, it's definitely interesting the way that things have changed, in that you don't have to do sort of necessarily the struggle upwards from small paper to slightly bigger paper to maybe a magazine. I think that's definitely a helpful thing, but what we've really seen over the last several years is just incredible contraction, especially in the digital realm, and that's really been evident in the past 2 years with things like Yahoo layoffs, with things like Fox Sports pivoting to digital and firing all their writers. I feel there's a lot less opportunity out there for people getting into the business now than there was even when I started, which wasn't all that long ago. And I think in the short term, everybody's sort of just looking for places to land. There's a lot of very good writers out there who have had bylines at national places like SI, like Fox Sports, like a whole range of other ones, and have been let go generally for reasons unrelated to their work. And a bunch of them have just left sports writing altogether. A bunch of them are still trying to make it work as freelancers and trying to catch on where they can. But at the moment, it seems to me that there's too few jobs and too many people to fill them. And I think that's going to be the case for the next few years. So it definitely makes planning for anything more than just keeping what I have very difficult.
Dan, am I correct that you, before Sports Illustrated, you worked for Deadspin? Did you work for some place?
I was an intern there in college, yeah.
Okay, so is that your career path right now? Intern, college, intern for Deadspin, and then getting the Sports Illustrated job?
Yeah, pretty much. I interned at Slate, too, for a little bit, in just straight news. That's what's crazy to me is how people, you know, in my age are just thrown into the fire. Like, you don't... You know, like I worked for the school newspaper, and I was, as a sophomore, I was sports editor. So I was sports editor and covering the men's tennis team and women's volleyball. And then I got hired just off of that as an intern at Deadspin. And so all of a sudden I'm used to writing for this weekly college paper. And then, you know, that summer I'm, you know, there's 20, 30, 50,000 people reading my posts on Deadspin, which I found alarming, because, you know, you're not, in this day and age, you're not, you know, a guy like me isn't going to I'm not working for my hometown paper in Fairfield, Connecticut, and, you know, having, 20
20 people read my stories. It's you go online and everyone sees it. And so I worked at Deadspin, and then I got hired out of college at SI. And, you know, and again, I'm posting, you know, 6 to 10 times a day on SI.com, and, you know, probably 100,000 people are reading it. And it's just crazy to me that, you know, that's the path. There's no, and if you mess up, you know, you're messing up in a very public way, and there's no hiding because you're at the most prominent publications in this country.
Before we get to Charlotte, Dan, that's something that's interesting that you just said that, because a lot of times when you're in your 20s, whatever mistakes you make, you get to make them at a much smaller venue. Like when I was basically your age, I was working for a weekly community newspaper in Buffalo, also like a big high school sports paper. And so if I screwed up, honestly, not many people were going to see the screw up, and I could sort of get around it. So when you were at Deadspin and when you were at Sports Illustrated, like how can you take like listeners through your thought process as to like, is it anxiety ridden? If it's a story where, you know, you think you have it, but you're not sure. I'd be curious to think like, what is it like to where the stakes are so much higher than what you were dealing with just let's say a couple months or years earlier?
So I was lucky at Deadspin to have a really supportive editor in Tommy Craggs. And I would say it was probably about 3 weeks after I started, and I was 19 years old, and I did a post. I forget what he was even on. It was about, like, I think it was indoor football in North Dakota. And I was sort of aggregating from a few different sources. And so I pulled a quote from the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, and due to an editing error, the attribution was chopped off. And so, but the post went up, and I didn't catch it after the editing process. And so then some guy, some blogger in Minnesota, he saw that, and he noticed, like, oh, that's what he felt was a plagiarized quote from the Sioux Falls paper. And he published a blog post, and then it got picked up by AOL. And so I get in the office the next morning, and the AOL post went up at, like, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, we called Deadspin for a comment, and they didn't reply. And so then, so I'm freaking out because, like, you know, I'm getting put on blast by AOL, which at this point, this is probably 2012, so their traffic is probably still pretty high. And, but I was lucky enough that, you know, Craig's called me, and he's like, listen, like, you know, I understand what happened, and I called AOL back, and I gave him a piece of my mind. And also, they had Tom Skoko write a piece just eviscerating the original blogger who had written that post. It was called Abe Sauer is a Dishonest Cretin. You can look it up. It's pretty funny. But I was lucky, you know, because those guys, they really had my back in that case. And really, you know, what I had done something a little bit wrong in not catching the editing error. But really, you know, there's not much I could do about it.
Charlotte, your background is interesting. That your mom is a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did she work? You want to say where she works? Or
yeah, she writes. She's sort of working on a book now. She's written three books. Transitioned out of the day-to-day journal,
okay.
But she was wrote for The Atlantic, Esquire, New York Times.
So you come from basically a family where journalism is sort of front and center on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I remember right, just from reading an interview that you did, you landed pretty quickly at Boston.com. Was that right?
Yeah.
Out of school or a couple years out of school?
No, I went to Colby College, so a small liberal arts school up in Maine, and I loved it. But and I think I've might have written this in that interview that you read, but I knew that I wanted to be a writer, and I went into, you know, everyone was like, well, I have a meeting with the Career Center, and I was like, well, I guess I'll make a meeting with the Career Center. So I go in, and the guy, you know, in Waterville, Maine, he's like, so what's your dream job? And I was like, I want to be on staff at Esquire. And he, like, starts rifling through binders. He goes, oh, okay, well, we don't know anyone in that world, but we have a lot of connections in the insurance world in Portland. And I was like, yeah, no, okay, wow. So I kind of knew that it was going to be, like, a situation where, because I didn't come from a big journalism program or even a journalism program at all, I was going to have to, like, kind of bushwhack my way in. So
right.
I had a blog, and I posted on that a lot. And from there, I got freelance opportunities at Boston Magazine, And sort of based on all of that, I got hired my first year out of school at America's Test Kitchen. So
that's right.
At Cooks Illustrated. I was at a cooking show.
And, yeah, but a phenomenal publication.
Oh, yeah. I learned a ton, a lot about cooking. Roast really good vegetables. but from there, I was there for about 2 years, and I was like, man, I don't want to be in food writing solely. So from there, I got hired at Boz.com as a generalist, and it was kind of the same thing to what Dan is saying. Like, you get there, and I'm 24, 25 at the time, and, you know, they're like, okay, you know, there's breaking news, there's a protest at BC, you got to cover it. And so I'm making calls to the police, and like, it thrown right into the fire in terms of just, I think local reporting is so invaluable. Like those reps, getting those reps in of where it's like, call the police, get a statement, write this up, get it up in 20 minutes is incredibly invaluable just for even, you know, sports writing now. If I see a story and I'm like, oh, cool, I want to hop on that, I know how to do that basic legwork reporting. But from there, you know, like Boston.com's traffic was huge at the time. I don't know what it is now, but because the Globe had just shifted away, all these people at Boston.com grandfathered into their desktops. So we would, Chartbeat was nuts. And so you mess up, and I did mess up. I messed up, you know, not in huge ways, thank God, but it's that same feeling that Dan was describing where you just, I kind of compare writing for the internet, if you're an anxious person, is like, being afraid of snakes and owning a snake store. Like you kind of just go in every day and you're like, okay, well, here, like, Steve, even now, even if I publish a stupid blog, I'm going through every single sentence being like, did I get this right? Is this wrong? Could this be misconstrued? Am I being clear? Because people will just rip you apart.
Charlotte, I want to stay with you. As a 20-something woman in the business, and who is writing-centric as opposed to television-centric.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking at the space, who are the people that – are there enough women out there in mentoring positions, even if you're not – even if you don't know them,
mm-hmm.
but sort of their work can serve as a mentoring position in the writing field right now? What we've seen certainly in terms of prominence, you know, people like Katie Nolan or Mina Kimes or Michelle Beadle, mm-hmm. or you know, on the like the traditional host side, Carrie Champion, Jemele Hill, whatever. There's a lot of women out there.
Mm-hmm.
What isn't really the case, at least in my experience, there are not a ton of women out there who are national sports writers writing nationally who are doing features.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, you are fairly unique. Is that correct about that? And so I wonder for you, where if you're at a paper, you know, there are probably older people you can go
right.
to. Like, do you have that system, or are you really, when you're doing these long features, are you just sort of trying to figure it out on your own? And that's not to say you couldn't ask men for help.
Right.
But you are, in my opinion, in a unique position that, one, there's not a lot of women your age who are doing what you do. I consider you basically like sort of a national feature writer in sports. And two, there are not many women who are older than you who have that position. And there's... You know, that's pretty shitty, by the way. And there's a lot of people who
right.
Who are to blame for that. And Sports Illustrated's staffing in this should be 100 times better. But I wonder if that's just something you think about, and if you want to stay in sports, like who's the 40-year-old woman who's doing long-form sports features right now that you talk to, if there is that woman?
I think, you know, Jackie McMullen
right.
Is incredible. I spoke to her the other day after the Kyrie piece because I thought it was so great, and I just... You know, we have a mutual friend and put me in touch, and it's just really heartening to even just hop on the phone for 15 minutes and be like, hey, thanks for, you know, it's thanks for doing this. And I think that opportunities, you know, I think they are there. And I think I have a lot of mentors who are men in this space who I feel very fortunate with the kindness that people in this industry have extended to me in terms of saying, hey, we think you have promise. Let's help you get better. Let's help you improve. And so that's meant a lot. I think, you know, people like Mina, who does just these incredible features for ESPN The Mag, Ramona Shelburne.
Right, yep, should have mentioned her.
You know, there are people out there. And I think for me what's kind of funny is it doesn't necessarily have to be the medium, right? Like, I look at, you know, Katie Nolan is a good friend of mine. And we met because I wrote about her for Boston.com. And she has been such a champion for me in terms of, you know, I listened to the podcast she did, and I told her this too, but after she was saying how, you know, meeting Michelle Beadle, she was a real influence for her. And I told Katie, I was like, look, you've kind of been that for me, in that you showed me, like, she and Mina and Michelle and, you know, Jamel does more commentary, but just being able to have a voice and hold your own in this space and really be funny too. Like, I think for me, being funny is such an important part of my work, or right. something. I mean, hopefully I could, you know, you might be listening to this being like, oh, she thinks she's funny, what a loser. But just showing that that's possible and breaking the mold of these more traditional media pieces where you can use personality but also like get at real reporting, like Mina goes to South Korea and does this incredible story on bat flip. Like it, right. it's stuff like that that really is buoying and heartening and makes me realize like, oh, okay, maybe this can survive. Maybe I can have a space here.
Andrew, how do you, as someone who really is focused mostly on sports media, I realize that's not the only thing you do, but I think seems like the majority of your posts are focused on that. How do you look? Mm-hmm. How do you look into the future as to if you want to stay covering that space? I mean, is working for Awful Announcing for the next 30 years realistic, or if not, do you have any kind of long term approach as to like, here's where I would like to be 10 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the sports media space is really interesting, and I think it's undercovered. I think you do a great job of it, and we certainly try to cover it pretty exhaustively, and then a few other sites will cover sports media stories when there's something big that sort of crosses over more into traditional sports. But I think there's a lot of value to doing the sports media coverage day in and day out, and I've certainly enjoyed it. In terms of what that means for the future, I mean, who knows if Awful Announcing is still there in 30 years or not. But certainly from the sports media side alone, there's very few places that you can go to and do that regularly. I'm always open to different things. As you mentioned, I do things other than sports media, so that's, I sort of keep that in mind as well. But yeah, I think in terms of covering sports media regularly, unless there becomes much more interesting than there is right now, I don't know if there's another spot I can really do that.
Dan, Charlotte certainly should weigh in on this too. Everybody who's on this podcast now is actually in a pretty good position in terms of what their age is and where they're employed. There are a lot of people who are at your age who are working for far less, circulation publications in terms of their work isn't seen as much. They're making less money. But what is interesting to me about the profession is that I think it's really hard for people your age to make the commitment to be in this now, because you're all bright and you could certainly make other choices, heading to business school or law school or learn to code, and you can make a shitload of money fairly early in your 20s. But you, all three of you, have decided to forge into journalism or writing, and you're going for it to see what it will bring you. But I think, Dan, the psychology of this is interesting, and I just wonder if you could be honest here and like, do you think about doing other things because of the potential, you know, you look down the road and let's say you want to have a family or you want to buy a house, or these are very hard things to do in journalism for people older than you. But if you were in another profession, those things are very, very possible, if not to mention, you know, even beyond that. So I'm wondering, someone who's in their mid-20s, how much of that stuff just floats through your mind about like, you know, what if I want a house one day? What if I want a family one day? Like, can I do what I love intrinsically, creatively, and yet still fulfill some of these like materialistic based needs that I want?
Yeah, I think about that a lot. It's sort of like, I think like if FBI got shut down tomorrow or, you know, 6 weeks from now or whenever, you know, and I'm still there, would I try to get another job in sports media? And it's like, maybe not. Like, it goes back to what Andrew was saying, how like there really aren't that many jobs. And it's going to be, you know, you're competing against a big pool of talent to try and get that job. And so but then I also think like, this is the only thing I know how to do. Like, I don't, like, you know, this is what I went to school for. Like, what I really should have done in retrospect is studied something else in school and just worked at the newspaper. But, like, I studied, and I didn't even study journalism. I studied communications and media studies, which is just, like, I don't know. I guess it could apply in other fields, and I just don't know what other jobs I would be qualified for. I'm sure I could do something, right? It's like off the top of my head, it's hard to think of something that would be a good fit for me and my skill set.
Yeah, it's an honest answer. What I do find, though, is as someone who's talked to a lot of young people, you'd be surprised at how much of the skill sets that you have actually would transfer to other professions. It's just hard to abstractly figure that out, but.
I just know I don't want to do PR.
Yeah, and that's not the case. But there's a great demand for good writing in many more professions than you think. That said, what is hard, and even hard for somebody my age, it's hard to figure out like how to get into that world where you can then sell people on what your skill set is. Charlotte, you strike me though as somebody who's really gonna go for it forever. Your mom is a journalist. I read the interview that you did. You should remind me where that was from. Who are the guys that do the 30
interview? Was it Jared Diamond and Mike Voronkov?
Jared is from the Wall Street Journal, and Mike is from some Jersey paper?
Yeah, he does the Sports Redef.
Redef, okay. So, right. And they basically ask you journalism questions. So it seems clear to me that you're in it for the long haul. I mean, whatever happens, sink, swim,
right.
Poverty, riches. You're not leaving.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's totally naive and stubborn on my part. But no, I'm trying to hang on as long as this industry exists. I want to be in it. I think that I kind of stumbled into sports writing, and it's ended up being the best place I could have ever ended up, and I'm extremely grateful for the series of very bizarre events that took place to get me where I am here today, and I feel very lucky to be in the job I'm in. I'm hopeful that if I can continue to be in this space in this world. I think it's the only thing I want to do is be a writer. And I love covering sports, and hopefully that stays. I do think there's a world in which, you know, maybe I would want to get more into broadcast or video or another medium with writing as the main thing at some point. I also think, you know, looking 10, 15 years down the line, like documentaries are really interesting to me. Writing, just sort of expanding in the space in a way that even if, like, say, my feature job dried up, like, maybe there are other ways that I could use these skills to still exist in this creative space making stuff. And I think that for kids starting out now, it's really hard because there aren't those entry-level jobs as much. And then, you know, I think part of the reason that I'm here is because of Twitter, is because I was able to sort of leverage that and like use who I am. I think that, you know, critics might say it's self-promotional or like making these bits but like it's job security on some level. Like if no one else can be me, then my job is more secure. And that's why I work my ass off to, you know, I try to do as much as I can, as well as I can, and have consistency in the voice so that it builds up, a reason that that I should exist in this space.
It's one thing they don't really teach you in communication journalism school is self-promotion and marketing, but it's important. I mean, it's really important.
Yeah, and you feel kind of weird, but
you do.
Like,
there's an internal push-pull or dichotomy in that.
Yeah.
You're on the one hand, you kind of loathe the over-the-top self-promotional people. On the other hand, there's a survival aspect to it, right? You have to put your work out.
It's a very
there.
Thin line you're walking.
Yeah, I agree with that. Andrew, to sort of piggyback on what Charlotte just said, and she mentioned sort of being more multimedia, and this will be the last sort of topic on this that we hit. Do you feel, maybe pressure's not the right word, but if you're listening to this podcast and you're 20 and you're in college and you want to go in the media field, where should video be in terms of your thinking? I think it was you who cited this, or maybe Dan cited this, that Fox not too long ago blew up all their writers and pivoted to video. Now the video they're basically just doing is remarketing, repackaging their television, but you know, there's a lot of places out there that have devalued the printed word and are chasing ad dollars to do video. Now, I think eventually that's going to that's fool's gold and eventually going to die. But it does, there are some jobs out there that are video centric, or there are certainly some writing jobs where your employer is going to require you to do video as well. How do you look at that part of the equation for young sports media people who want to be in this profession? What should they be thinking about when it comes to video or linear television? And then we'll eventually get into podcasting too.
Yeah, I mean, I think being as multimedia as you can and as experienced in multimedia production as you can is an incredible asset for people looking to get into the field at this point. And I think it really comes down to supply and demand. There's a whole lot of people willing to write words on sports for no or next to no pay. There's less people willing to do a podcast about it or talk about it in some other audio format. And then there's less people still who do anything video related and do it with any sort of skill. And so, and as you mentioned, a lot of media outlets really are going towards the video side. Fox isn't really hiring external people for that, but other places are. And so there's jobs out there on the video side, and there's less people flooding them with applications. So I do think that's definitely a great skill to have. Now, I also agree with you, though, Richard, in that I think that a lot of the pivots to video are really fool's gold. And we've covered this extensively, that a lot of the sites have really tried that. It's just killed their traffic. And it doesn't really help your ad dollars if you're creating all these videos that nobody's actually watching. So I do think there is still a lot of value to the written word. I think a lot of people are going to keep reading articles on their phones. They're going to keep reading articles at work in places where video or audio doesn't really work as well. And so I would say to young people who really enjoy writing, there's still value in doing that. There's still value in building your skills there. But the challenge right now is that the written word is monetized very poorly, and that there aren't a lot of jobs out there, and there are a whole lot of people who want them.
Dan, how do you look at that question, even in your own career path? You know, how much video should I be doing? Is there more safety if I do video? And I always think that this is I'm sure, Charlotte, you feel this way too. You know, you think of yourself as a writer, and you love words, and that is sort of where your passion lies. But you are now getting these messages that, you know, we need to extend you as a personal brand in terms of multimedia. The ad dollars coming into our place, there's more of them on video than there is for the printed word. And they're, you know, it gets to be for some people, I think, that if you want to keep your job, you really have to have a multimedia skill set. How do you approach this, especially, again, given that you're in your 20s and you're trying to figure out, well, you know, is this what it's going to be like for the next 30 years?
I wonder how stable video is, because one thing, I noticed at SI, like, everyone is reading our site during the workday. Like, traffic dips at night and on weekends. And you can't, like, surreptitiously watch video at work.
Right.
So, certainly, you know, if the audience is consuming things at work, then, you know, silently reading is definitely the way to go. But you do see video play very well on social. And so, but the problem there is it's difficult to monetize video on Twitter or Facebook. And those platforms are always saying, yeah, we're getting closer to monetizing those things. And they've been saying that for years. And you wonder, you know, if that day comes, and when it comes, I guess, how effective will it be? I think, you know, video on a website is, you know, like an SI.com or an ESPN, you know, SB Nation kind of website is a little bit of a more difficult bargain, because you're running ads against it, but people despise autoplay video. You should see how many tweets we get about autoplay video. They can't stand it. And, like, certainly, you know, I think you could just as easily replace in autoplay video with, basically, the advertisers care about having their ad play. So if you just autoplay the ad and don't have a video behind it, like, that's just as good to them.
Charlotte, did you want to add anything in there?
I think in terms of video, you know, there are a bunch of different avenues, right? You can be on the technical side, you can be on the creative side, you producing on camera stuff. I think for me, I've always liked being on camera and I don't think that's necessarily true of a lot of writers, and I don't know why I do, but, you know, I enjoy, I think there are sort of some of the same skill sets that can come with writing, you know, like if I could do one of my sort of sillier blogs, or I could do it as like an on-camera thing, and I'm not particularly, you know, when it comes to feature writing, that's always going to be the thing that I love most, and getting to take those big swings and dissect something. And you can only do that, I think, in, you can do it in documentaries, you can do it in sort of reported out video stuff. But for me, my number one love is doing it written. But for other stuff, other formats, I do enjoy the video and the sort of performative aspect of doing the on-camera stuff. So that's never been something that I've resisted or not wanted to do. I think it's kind of fun. But I think that you do have to balance out your time then and be like, okay, you know, if I'm working with this team for that and that team for this, where do I fit it all in? And it becomes sort of a career path thing where you're sitting down with people and being like, okay, where do we want to break this up? How is this going to work? What are our goals out of this, both for the site and for me as a human? So I think it's about balancing that.
All right. I want to ask you three, what sports podcast you're listening to right now and why? We'll start with you, Andrew.
Well, I think I'm a bad choice for this one because I don't actually listen to sports podcasts. And I listen to sports podcasts.
Terrible booking by me, Andrew.
I listen to sports podcasts when they have news that we're likely to write about. And your podcast actually is probably one of the top ones there. There's a couple others in this space occasionally, but generally when I'm listening to podcasts, it's for my recreation. So I'd rather listen to podcasts about board games.
Right. What a bust that question was for Andrew. Charlotte, come in here and save this podcast, please.
You know, I tend to listen to podcasts that either my friends in the industry are doing or have gone on. I like hearing what people I know, you know, supporting my buds. Like, I'll listen to Bill Barnwell's I Love When He Has Mina On. I listen to Katie's, which dropped recently. Right. I listen to...
Katie Nolan, that is.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay. You know, when I listen to your when you have the one-on-one guests, probably more than these.
Yeah, this is not a
I do though. I'm just being
honest.
Nice of you, like,
but I,
like right. When Jamel was on, like, yeah, I'm definitely going to listen to that. I also I do listen to Pardon My Take. I think that Big Cat and PFT are very funny. I know that there are, you know, people are like, oh, well, it's Barstool, and I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, and I don't really want to get into that whole thing, but I do listen to that. I think that a big thing that I appreciate about good podcasts in general, not just the sports space, are when you build up a relationship with your listeners, and when you have a relationship with a co-host that people can buy into and feel like they're hanging out with their friends on their way to work. And I think that a lot of times podcasts and the sports space, for me, are kind of soothing, which, you know, like I think if I'm ever having a bad day, or, you know, when the world feels like it's falling apart, sometimes I put on a podcast about football and I just listen to people like tell me about the Browns front office. Like it feels both something that I care about professionally, but also meaningless in the most beautiful way that sports can be meaningless, that I just it calms me down. So I think that's something that I look for in what I'm listening to.
Listen, in the Trump era, I totally understand that. Dan, I'm surely got to what I wanted to get to. I was trying to get what you listen to, but then beyond that, I want to know why you listen to it. What is it about a certain sports podcast that clicks for you? So same thing. What are the sports podcasts you listen to? And the more important part is why you connect with that podcast.
So I listen to mostly baseball podcasts. I like Effectively Wild, which is Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer and Jeff Sullivan from Fangraphs. I like that because they have a good rapport, but it's also very stats-driven. It's like smart. There's no hot takes. It's all very measured. They have a lot of fun, too. They do like a weekly listener email show where they just get real crazy with, you know, hypothetical situations and things like that. That's fun. I also like, also from Fangraphs, is the podcast Carson Cistulli does. I think that, like, he's just so self-deprecating. Like,
he has like a really unique sort of approach as a podcaster, where like he's asking the questions and he's like me, you know, I'm a stupid person, so explain this to me. And he's also like he's a really interesting guy. I listened to like yesterday, I went to the grocery store and I listened to the Ringer NFL show, but that's like at the bottom of my list. Like that's like only because like I knew like, okay, like I know I'm going to be watching football today, and the day before I listened to it too. And you know, just, you know, if I am going to be watching football, I'll listen to that. But like, it's not at the top of my list. I only listen to the ones they do with, Robert Mays and Kevin Clark. I can't stand Michael Lombardi. I think that guy is he blows himself up a little bit sometimes, I think. So I only listen to the Robert Mays ones, just because I loved the when Mays and Bill Barnwell did their podcast for Grantland. That was like an all-time great. And then once Grantland shuttered and those guys split up, that was a very bittersweet for me.
Yeah, I forgot to say I also listened to the Ringer NFL show. When with Mays and Clark,
do you guys? What are your thoughts?
That's the same. It's the same as with Effectively Wild, because those are the guys who are like, they're smart and they analyze, you know, the game from a very stats driven sort of objective way, rather than, you know, the heart and soul sort of approach that the guys take.
Are you three bullish on podcasts? You think if we had this conversation 10 years from now, they're an established part of the media diet?
Yeah, I think.
All right, we'll go Andrew first.
I only listen to podcasts when I'm commuting. Like, I don't listen to music anymore.
Okay,
I listen to music at work, but not when I'm commuting.
Okay, Andrew?
Yeah, I think podcasts are only going to rise. I mean, I think they're going to be where a lot of radio is right now. And I think we're seeing moves like even Bomani Jones ending his radio show and going into a podcast. I think that's going to be much more the norm in the next little while. Because podcasts are so much more convenient in terms of you can listen to them whenever, wherever. The challenge for sports, I think, is that a lot of sports podcasts, because they're so news focused, they don't have the sort of the long tail that podcasts in other mediums do, where you can pick it up a year later and it's still relevant. But I think it is still going to become a bigger and bigger thing in sports. I think you guys both mentioned the importance of really having a host personality and having that come through, and I think that's really key. And that did make me think that the one sports, or at least sports adjacent podcast I do listen to is Joe Posnanski's podcast, Michael Schur, and it's ridiculous and silly, and the two of them just argue and draft ridiculous things, and for me that's a very good, very entertaining way to do it, and a way where you can listen to it a month or two later and you're not really missing much because it's not so focused on the news.
Yeah,
the thing about podcasts, oh, go ahead, Charlotte.
No, just I think that I think podcasts are only going to expand. I think they're fun. You know, I sort of brainstorm ideas of like, if I had one, what would it look like?
In all honesty, like, you, I mean, you're a prominent voice at SB Nation. How come you don't have one?
I don't know.
I don't know SB Nation as an organization, but is it as simple as could you just make the pitch to whoever you have to make to, and could something happen if you wanted one? Whatever, you have an idea that you think is interesting, and whether you're a solo host or you have a partner and you pitch it, and you know, it seems to me that like that would be an additional platform for you to get your stuff out, right? You're looking at me like, don't get me fired.
it's something that has come up.
Jim Bankoff. Who's running that place? Is this Spencer Hall?
It's something that you know, we're talked about. I'm not totally sure where the process is. I think that it's really a great way to explore things that written wise someone might look at and be like, why did you publish this? Like, right. why are you doing it? But on a podcast, people tend to be more forgiving in terms of letting you coming along on a journey with you and being like, okay, cool. Yeah. Let's talk about sports media with 330s. Whereas if you publish this as it could be a good article, but that's a bad example. But I do think that there's a freedom to the medium, and it lets you get a little bit more whacked out with stuff, which I'm totally all for. And see growing as I'd be interested, though, to see what the new analytics around podcast will end up doing to the space. I think it's been sort of wild and free in a fun way because you haven't really been able to track where do people drop off listening? What are the numbers? How is this all? And now that you can, I hope that it keeps that a little bit more freewheeling spirit, which I'm crossing my fingers for.
And the thing with podcasts that's interesting is engagement, because you could have engagement for a couple of hours.
Right.
And what is the value in that versus like just reading something for 3 minutes, right?
Totally.
Yeah. And how do you monetize that?
Exactly. Basically? And I think something that podcasts are interesting for is in terms of monetizing, you are having the person that people buy into already being like, yeah, I do use Blue Apron. And people are like, oh, sick, she uses Blue Apron. Awesome, I'm going to try. Like, I think that probably goes a fairly longer way in terms of prestige. You know, it might not give you the same bang for your buck, but it's brand equity in a lot of ways.
All right, is there anything that you three want to talk about? I'll leave the...
I was just going to mention the thing about podcasts, that there's no barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, anyone can start a podcast. Like, I just looked up right now, do you know, I'm sure Dice might not know, but the other two might, Chapo Trap House.
Thanks, Dan.
What was that?
What was that? What's it called?
Chapo Trap House.
You son of a bitch, I've never heard of that.
It's this left-wing politics podcast. And they release two episodes a week. One is free, and one is only for people who donate to their Patreon page.
Oh, wow.
And you get for $5 a month on Patreon, you get access to the bonus episodes. They are collecting per month on Patreon $91,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's genius.
So, like, and those are just like three guys who were on another podcast together and then launched their own and like released it on SoundCloud.
So they're like Pod Saves America Junior, basically. same premise,
sure,
or?
In a way.
Yeah.
Something along those lines is that like I was.
Yeah, they're very irreverent and. It's like funny, but also like really, insightful politics.
What you hit on though is the Charlotte Gattie said. The interesting one is that $91,000. That is like true. That's not just engagement. That's engagement / people going into their pockets to support this enterprise so that it continues. I mean, that kind of loyalty. Any website would kill for,
right?
You know,
that's what I was going to touch on. Is I was home over break in Boston, and one of my best friends came over, and she was wearing a Pod Save America shirt. And there was also, you know, people who follow sports, who I'm friends with, who aren't in the space, will text me and be like, "What's so and so really like?" Or do you know what the deal is with it? Like, people love getting behind the scenes information because journalists or sports media people become these personalities too. And she was wearing a Pod Save America shirt, and I was like, what do you like about this? And she was like, oh, I love their relationship with each other. She was like, I know their dogs' names. I like, people buy into hosts that they like, and that's a built-in audience because they've bought into you. And I think podcasts are, I think some people can do that with their writing. I think you saw that way more with blogs and like 2009 through maybe 13. And now I think that kind of fan or reader loyalty has shifted to podcasts.
All right, Andrew, I'm going to ask you this. I'll probably go to hell for this question from some quarters, but that's okay. So let's pretend like you're in Las Vegas and you're betting, you're making a futures bet. You know what a futures bet is, Andrew? I'm sure
you
already
got it. I sure do.
All right. So excluding the three people who are on this podcast, give me the person 30 years old or under in the sports media who you'd place big money on a futures bet to be big in the space.
Ooh, yeah, that's tough. Yeah.
Dan and Charlotte get the benefit of being able to think about this as your answer.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of the challenge there for me is I don't really know a lot of people's ages, but...
Take a guess, Andrew.
Yeah.
Like, don't say Colin Coward. He's probably over 30. Not to mention that would be a horrible, horrible bet.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of young, talented writers out there. I think we certainly have a bunch at Awful announcing in the comeback. I think For the Win has a lot. SB Nation has a lot.
I don't know if I can really spotlight any one in particular, though.
Andrew, this is like a Kofi Annan answer. Enough with the diplomacy and make a pick. Let's go, Trudeau. All right, I'll give you a chance, Andrew. You're a Canadian. I know you have to be polite. So let's go to Dan. I'm coming back to you, Andrew. Dan, do you have one? Do you want to?
I got one. It might be a homer pick, but I like SI.com's Rohan Nadkarni.
Wow.
Oh, I love Rohan.
Under 30. Yeah. Rohan getting some love. All right.
Rohan, don't let this go to your head.
Rohan.
Oh, it will. He'll be stunned it's on this podcast. all right. So you're going for Rohan.
Hear it then.
Under 30. I like that. Charlotte?
Yeah, I think Ro's great. He's funny. He's smart.
You can't pick him, though.
I'm not going to pick him.
All right, good. Thank you.
Richard, give me a second.
All right.
But I think SB Nation has a ton of young talent that's really fun to, you know, I'm 28 and I sometimes feel old there. They'll say things and I'm like, I don't know.
You ever see Logan's Run, the film where,
no.
It's a famous film where once you turn 30.
Yeah, you die, you're
well,
dead.
Well, you go to Sanctuary, but if you decide not to go to Sanctuary, then these runners go to try to kill you.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, no, that's.
Famous film.
That'll be fun in two years. I think, you know, and I don't. I would include everyone if I could. I think someone that I've been really impressed by recently is my coworker Jess Smetana. Works on our video team. I think she's currently the only woman on our video team, maybe. And she is really, she's young, she's smart, her tweets are so funny. And I forget that she is as young as she is because she's really good and smart. And
what's her Twitter handle?
I think it's just at Jessica Smetana. I'm not.
Spell that.
Smetana. Is that right?
Yeah,
is that
that's right.
Of?
Okay.
Yeah. And she and I'm going to Minnesota to cover the Super Bowl, and she's going to be out there with me, and I'm pretty psyched about. Hopefully, we can do some fun stuff. So
you're covering the Super Bowl.
I am.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Imagine just the Vikings in Minnesota.
I'm really like I really love this Eagles team, and I wrote about Chris Long, and I feel sort of a slight loyalty there because that was really fun, and they're great. But from a content standpoint, going out there to have the Vikings in it would just be really, really cool.
If you have the freedom to sort of go around town and do what you want, that would be amazing.
I on the train here, I was writing notes myself, like Super Bowl ideas, and I was like, ooh, like Vikings at home story.
You could literally do, you could do anything.
I'm going to go on the Prince tour of Minnesota, of Minneapolis, no matter what.
Can you get into his house?
I don't know. I'm going to try.
I feel like some people have. If the Vikings are there, you're going to be able to. Will you blog daily, or are you just going to write a long story?
I'm not totally sure what it's going to look like yet. I'm also doing a lot of video stuff out there.
Oh, that's great.
So I think it'll depend on what that
that's
all.
That's a great assignment, though. Congrats.
Yeah, I'm psyched. Thank you.
All right, Andrew, I'm back to you. I gave you now like literally 5 minutes to think of one name.
I've got two, actually.
All right,
the homer pick is going to be my colleague Alex Potterman. He's been working for us for a couple of years now, and he's done some really great things, some good reported features and so on. The non-homer pick is actually going to be Danny Kelly of The Ringer. He's a guy who I've been following since his SB Nation days. He used to do Seahawks stuff for them. I think he's a really good, really insightful NFL writer. He had a great piece that dropped today on how we should overlook the great performance that Drew Brees turned in, even if it was in a losing cause. And I think he has an excellent balance between sort of the schematic breakdowns that are becoming more popular and also how to relate those to a wider audience. So I think big things are ahead for him.
I like that. There's a lot of very smart people in the space. Omar Raja, the founder of House of Highlights, was on this podcast a couple of weeks ago. He's 23. I like his future. I like that guy who I think his name is Jade Hoy. Wasn't he like the podcast sort of guru at ESPN? And now he's running the Basketball Friends. That's a guy.
I can't believe nobody mentioned that guy Shams from Yahoo, the NBA newsbreaker.
Nah, he's old news.
New Woj. Shams,
new Woj. New Woj.
Yeah, I told our guys to
Woj
hire that
2.0.
Yeah, I mean, Shams obviously would be – I almost feel like he – you can't really pick him because he's sort of established. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like he's made it.
He's kind of a made guy already.
How do you know when you've made it?
Yeah, there's still.
That's a great question.
Like, he's not on TV yet.
I don't know if he's interested. By the way, I've asked him to do this podcast multiple times. He's turned it down because he's very press shy. To his credit, he's not a guy who really
wants.
So
you get us on a runner mouse.
Oh, you guys
throw
are
us under the bus, Richard.
You guys are publicity easy. Charlotte flew here on the Concorde. She wanted the airtime. So
I did. Yeah, they shut it down, but I built a plane for this.
She literally built a plane.
Mm, as I flew it.
Yeah, Shams, who I think has an interesting story, actually is very – he's not a guy who does a lot of media, which is really interesting for someone from your generation where the – doing that stuff is not as like verboten as it might have been if you're the Bob Woodward, you know. Although Bob Woodward's a terrible example because he's publicity maniac. But you know what I mean. So like, but I also wonder if he is not doing publicity because whenever the Yahoo contract ends, maybe he wants to head to ESPN. But yeah, Charlotte asked a good question. Like, what is like if you're? I almost feel like if you're known in your subset of the media pretty well, I think you've made it. Like, to me, he's sort of known in basketball circles, so I don't think he's a futures pick. I think all three of you would be futures pick, although I think Charlotte's pretty close to not being a futures pick.
Wow.
And then in sports media...
Nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Yeah, and then, but honestly, and in sports media, I don't know if Buchholz is a future pick because I think people who read this stuff know him. So maybe... I hate to say Dan could be the only futures pick on this podcast.
Yeah, I'm the line in the reeds here.
You're also the youngest guy on the podcast, Dan.
Dan, I believe in you.
So, yeah, maybe riding Rohan's coattails, Dan, will be your. Can you get some?
I am older than him by 1 month.
Are you? Can you get your own show on that SI? What are we calling this?
Crossover? Is that the crossover?
No. What are we calling?
SITV.
SITV.
Ooh.
I'm gonna get fired after this podcast. Yeah. Can you get your own show on SITV? Seems like they're no offense.
Subscribe on Amazon channels.
I feel like they're giving that away, Dan. I honestly think you can get your own 2-hour block. You do your own Game of Thrones. All right, listen. You three are fabulous. Is there anything else we need to talk about with you three that you want to get to? I'm not going into the deep in the woods. You know, what do you think of Jim Miller's piece on John Skipper? Well, what do you think of last week's college football ratings? I'm not wasting your time with that stuff. If I'm going to waste time, I'm going to do that with O'Rand and Trina. So is there anything that you guys want to get to that we didn't get to that's just on the top of your head before we get out of here?
Not that comes to mind.
Yeah, I think we...
Andrew?
I think we're good.
All right, so let's go then through all the promos here. Charlotte Wilder is a staff writer for SB Nation who does not have a podcast for some reason. Check out her work on that fine site. Charlotte, what is your Twitter handle?
It's at the Wilder Things.
Yeah, you have the best Twitter handle out of anybody on this podcast, right?
Thanks.
Now, which is very cool. Dan Garland is a writer for SI.com. You can check out his – because he's sort of at the – what are we calling that desk, Dan? The emerging news desk? Is that right?
Well, it was Wire for a long time, and now
Action Desk?
I think it's part of the Growth Team.
Growth Team. All right. So the
Growth Desk?
I'm trying to say this to point out that you can basically read Dan's work. You might publish like 5 stories a day, right? With your byline?
At least that. Yeah.
Yeah,
you can stumble on it by accident pretty easily.
Yeah. My hope for Dan is that eventually he sort of like can find time. Unfortunately, he'll probably have to do this on his own to do some enterprise stuff away from that desk where he can write some features and stretch that way. But he is.
Yeah, I've got ideas, but.
Yeah. I'm not saying this just because he came on this podcast. He does a lot of stuff for the media section, and he's one of the people at SI I trust. And so when stuff comes up and if I know he's working on it, I feel like we're not getting sued. So it's a very good thing. Andrew Buchholz is a staff writer for Awful Announcing. He has written about sports media for a while. Are you still doing CFL stuff, Andrew?
No. Yeah. Every once in a while, not much.
And you're part of the podcast, the Awful Announcing podcast group. Whenever these guys come on and you guys answer questions about what could be happening or you discuss news of the week, right?
Yep. Yeah, we've relaunched the Awful Announcing podcast, and it's generally every 2 weeks now.
Well, tell Charlotte Wilder doesn't seem that hard to get a podcast. I feel like her bosses are really not stepping up for her. All right. So listen, thank you very much. All three of you will be back on again. I know we've really focused a lot on the 30 and under stuff, but I just think that's interesting because like there's not a lot of those conversations that exist. And I respect the work of all three of you, and so I wanted to get you guys on to hit that. But you are all welcome back on the podcast for traditional weeks when we, you know, dissect in 90-minute terms, like, you know, the last thing that FS1 did or the last thing that NBC Sports did. All right, I'll keep you guys here, and I will do this wrap-up. Lou Pellegrino is the producer of this podcast, who really has not been paying attention throughout the whole podcast. He's been on his phone the whole time. But I still appreciate his work because he's the basically the genius who has to cut this up and make it sing. My thanks to Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated. If you are interested in this if you are interested in this content, I should say, the podcast is the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast or the SI Media Podcast. Previous guests before these three fine people were Katie Nolan. We had a sports media roundtable with Chad Finn and Jimmy Trina. And then the individual guests, Jamel Hill, Mike Francesa, Tara Lipinski, and Johnny Weir, Gino Auriemma, coach of UConn, Marty Smith, and the list goes on. Thank you so much for the support. If you like this stuff, please leave a review and a rating. See, Charlotte, this is totally self-promotional, as you were talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah. Well, you got to do it, man.
You got to do it. You got to do it. All right. So for Charlotte Wilder, for Andrew Buchholz, for Dan Gartland, for Lou Pellegrino, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.